Okay, we only got half an hour, so let's see how much I can read. I don't know if I want to do it this fast, but have we got everybody's in? No echo, so here we go. So we've done, this is the Don Thiel article in Explorations Number 2, came out in April 1954, and it is called Here Comes Everybody, page 66 of the issue. We've done page 66, 67, 68, 69, 70, 71, should be 72, 73, and now we're into 74, 75, 76, and a little bit of 77. So we've done this whole thing about art in its work, Aquinas' principle that art in its work imitates nature. We did a lot of that in the last stuff. It'll be posted in proper order by Ed. So the next paragraph. James Joyce's realism is susceptible of analysis from the pragmatic and behavioristic points of view. So behaviorism, you know, Skinner, the Skinner box, that was a kind of psychology before the 60s, popular psychology. Wyndham Lewis used to write a novel or two satirizing the behavioristic scientific view of humans. Like you could say, very materialistic view. Stimulus and response, the Pavlov dog stuff. Joyce's realism is susceptible of analysis from the pragmatic and behavioristic points of view, but in action extends beyond any such static analysis. That would be like visual space analysis. Just like, remember, we're saying this is a description of Ion. Ion's realism is susceptible of analysis from the pragmatic and behavioristic points of view, but in action, it extends beyond any such static analysis, the Ion perspective. That is why Ulysses, the novel Ulysses, can be classified as a realistic and intensely symbolic work. The mass communication media, in brackets particularly the press, and the form of the modern city provided Joyce, and the form of the modern city, so the mass communication media, particularly the newspaper, and the form of the modern city provided Joyce with epiphanies that are always rooted in the commonplace. In the commonplace. There's McLuhan's from cliché to archetype. The cliché, the commonplace. Finnegan's Wake is a treatment of this problem from another angle, not the angle of Ulysses. Joyce formed an epic, he's talking about Ulysses, I think here. No, Ulysses is an epic. McLuhan said that Finnegan's Wake is not an epic, it's a drama. But Thiel is saying, he's using the term epic here. He's young, he doesn't know the difference, or maybe he does, I don't know why he's saying it. Joyce formed an epic from the mass media. Now that's pretty amazing to know in 1953 that he made this from the mass media environments. Joyce formed an epic from the mass media by knowing what to select and how to handle the selection in the internalization of conversation in the dreaming giant Finnegan. The dreaming giant is having an internal conversation and knowing how to relate that to the media world by selection. Throughout Finnegan's Wake run asides, that's like speaking to the side, such as, quote, here's an aside, if you're looking for the builder, deep your ear on the movie tone. So it's telling you, hey, you're looking at a movie here. You think it's a book, but if you are looking for the builder deep, or the deep builder, if you're looking for the builder, deep your ear on the movie tone. Or describing the letter, the exegesis of which is a mode in miniature of the exegesis of Finnegan's Wake. Here's the description of the letter. This is an aside. This is Joyce telling you what's going on. This non-day diary, this all-night's newsery reel, or nursery reel. My dear sir, in this wireless age, any owl rooster can peck up Bostoons, meaning Boston, or describing the Dublin of the washerwomen, a phantom city faked of film folk. And phantom is spelled P-H, faked is spelled P-H, film is spelled P-H, and folk is P-H. Negative P-H.
May I say something?
Yes.
Both Joyce and Cocteau are recurring to these archetypes and to this to the dream. At the end of the Orpheus film, Orpheus and Eurydice think all that happened was a dream, and in the Finnegan's Wake, everything is supposed to be like a dream.
But wait a minute. Many critics say it's a dream, but Joyce said in 1995 to me through the Evergreens, it's not a dream.
Yes, that's the thing, that at the end is not a dream.
Right, it's real.
It's real.
It's the media.
Yeah,
mediascape.
That's the thing that both Joyce and Cocteau were referring as men as sleeping awake.
Yes.
Like, but at the end, this dream is not a dream. It's like,
right,
what is reality, what is not reality, and
it's a
where
new
does
day.
The film end, like with Cocteau? That was the film, and this is reality.
Right. He couldn't make the separation. So this non-day diary, this all-night newsery reel, my dear sir, in this wireless age, any old rooster or any owl rooster can pick up Boston, or, but it's spelled Bostoons, or describing the Dublin of the washerwomen. That's earlier in Chapter 8 of Book 1. It's a Phantom City fake to film folk, and that's in quotes. This technique of the wake, says Don Thiel, is an attempt to merge the onslaught of a new oral tradition with a written tradition that is ultimately based on the oral tradition. In such a method, the great clue that Joyce discovered was the nature of language as a key to the labyrinth of human cognition. Now, that's McLuhan's insights written in 1953 that Don would have read a few months earlier before he wrote this essay. And he's just finishing up his PhD. Just finishing up his PhD with McLuhan and other people.
When the death takes the people from this world, they actually are awake. They stand up.
Yep.
And that's the wake of they're going to the other parallel world. But
awake.
Death is not what we think. It's like going somewhere else.
Right.
So this is this play with the word, the wake.
Yeah. Okay. In such a method, the great clue that Joyce discovered was the nature of language as a key to the labyrinth of human cognition, which would include the labyrinth of whether you're awake or not. As much as indicated in the wake among opinions concerning the fall and its nature. So there's the fall. No, as much as indicated in the wake among opinions concerning the fall and its nature, then it has a quote, Sylvia Silence, the girl detective, and she's also referred to as Meminerva, or Minerva, the owl, Meminerva, but by now one hears turtlings all over Doveland, take off on Dublin. Okay, Sylvia Silence, the girl detective, when supplied with information as to the several facets of the case in her cozy-dozy bachelor's flat, quite overlooking John Adream's muse, M-E-W-S, she leaned back in her really-truly easy chair to query restfully through her vowel-threaded syllables. She says, and this would be like, I think it's a Donald Duck thing, have you ever thought reporter, but it's spelled W-E-P-O-W-T-E-W, reporter, reporter, that sheer greatness was his tragedy. It can't say the letter R. Have you ever thought, reporter, that sheer greatness was his tragedy? That's how it's written, finding its wake. So she's the great detective. She's being interviewed by the reporter in her cozy dozy bachelor's flat, quite overlooking John Adream's muse, leaning back in her really truly easy chair to query restfully through her vowel-threaded syllables. So that has something to do with the fall, this whole Sylvia Silence girl detective thing. Okay. So she's saying, have you ever thought, reporter, that sheer greatness was a tragedy? I guess we're all subject to the fall. So no matter how great we become, we're still jerks. Have you ever thought, reporter, that sheer greatness was his tragedy? Now, that's called hamartia. Your tragic flaw is what you're good at turns out to be your tragic flaw. So then, Don Thiel says, the term detective, in quotes detective, suggests the method for retracing the labyrinth of vowel-threaded syllables. The musical motif is indicative of the manner in which the wake is constructed. It is a work of meminerva, memory, the time binder, and nerves, instantaneous sensual response, leading to spatial reconstruction. I guess that refers to nerves and instantaneous sensual response leading to spatial reconstruction. Fused in Minerva, the figure of mental arts and wisdom. Minerva the owl. Typical of the encyclopedic method of Finnegan's Wake are the correlations between the two main figures, H.C.E. and his wife, A.L.P. As Marshall McLuhan writes, quote, so he would just read this a few months because this is written in late 53, and McLuhan published these essays earlier in 53. So Don says, as my great teacher, Marshall McLuhan writes, quote, she just says, as Marshall McLuhan writes, quote, HCE is mountain, male, and active. ALP is river, female, and passive. But ALP elp equals mountain, and historically the letter H is interfused with the letter A, and A is both ox face and plow, first of arts and letters, so that dramatically the roles of HCE and ALP are often interchangeable. Remember I point that out about cliched archetype? Any dialectic McLuhan sets up, they start to interpenetrate. One could go on to suggest that ALP, for example, is both mountain and molehill, for the ALP in Irish is also a small salamander-like creature, and HCE is an old par, that's mentioned on the first page, who is a drinker of scotch, a young salmon, and an old man all at once. Drinker of scotch, a young salmon, and an old man. So he's a fish, too. Not only is the structure of the letters themselves employed as gestures, intermixed with verbal play, but the love chase of HCE after ALP is presented in the cinematic terms, of a Sonja Heine ice carnival. She was a famous, you know, 30s or 40s figure skater, I think. In the cinematic terms of a Sonja Heine ice carnival with a maximum of metamorphosis, the love chase is presented in the cinematic terms of a Sonja Heine ice carnival with a maximum of metamorphosis. The tendency of criticism, so now he's talking about Joyce critics, those that say it's a dream or this or that. You kind of label it something. That's called univocity or univocal approach, not multivocal. The tendency of criticism, accustomed to the flat perspectives of univocity, has been to emphasize one aspect of the work. It is described as a book for the ear, a book of wordplay, a book of metamorphoses, a great work of landscape art, a great work of landscape art, etc. These forms, however, are all adapted to previous modes of communication. While the wake is adapted to overlayerings within the self that are characteristic of modern culture. I would add the overlayerings of the five bodies that make up the self. So he's trying to show, look.
The ionic what? Overlay.
Yes. Yes, the ionic overlay. So to say it's a wordplay, a book of metamorphoses, that's limited to the former modes of communication, the Gutenberg Galaxy modes of communication. But The Wake is a book adapting to all the aspects of electronic culture. Finnegan's Wake works simultaneously through a series of dialectical oppositions in existence. So these dialectical oppositions, remember Coker's doing the dialectical, digital dialectics. Well, this is analog media dialectics. The Wake works simultaneously through a series of dialectical oppositions in existence and their communal participation in all forms of existence. So there's dialectical oppositions and then communal participation in all forms of existence. The brothers, Shem and Sean, are opposites yet components of all human experience. In The Inquest of Yawn, that's Sean asleep. Sean then ends up channeling HCE, his father. In The Inquest of Yawn, or Sean asleep, by the four old men, the inquiries regarding the brother Shem always return to a confusion of the two. Anagrams are used as a technical device to point up the conflict and reconciliation that the two brothers represent. The conflict and reconciliation. The questioner at one point states, quote, Hood maketh not Frere. The voice is the voice of Jokup, J-O-K-E-U-P, or Jacob, I fear. The voice is the voice of Jokup, I fear. Are you imitation Roma now or Amor now? Roma becomes Amor. So reading that again, anagrams are used as a technical device to point up the conflict and reconciliation that the two brothers represent. The questioner at one point states, quote, Hood maketh not Frere, or French for brother. The voice is the voice of Jokup, I fear. Are you imitation Roma now or Amor now? End of quote. Under Inquisition, Sean is gradually becoming Shin, who is, quote, my shemblabo, my fear, my freer, my shemblabo, my freer. I think we talked about last time that's Baudelaire's envoy or preface to the reader, and he calls the reader my hypocrite lector, my shemblabo, my freer. Okay, so Sean is, under Inquisition, Sean is gradually becoming Shem, for both are aspects of HCE, or here comes everybody. Shem is the I and Sean the me. Joyce, James Joyce, in spite of the similarities with Shem, openly associates himself with HCE in the same section. Quote, speak to the right, rotisis kakeni. He can never be bothered, but man e'er be waked. But man ever be waked. If there is a future in every past, there's Ion. If there is a future in every past that is present, then he has a French question. Qui est qui non nobit Quinigan? And qui quae note, and qui quae quote at Quinigan's quake? Okay, so reading that again. If there is a future in every past that is present, qui est, maybe it's who is qui non nobit Quinigan? And qui, quai, quote, at Quinigan's quake. And then continuing the quote from Finnegan's Wake, Stump, his producers, are they not his consumers? That was one of McLuhan's favorite quotes from Finnegan's Wake. His producers, are they not his consumers? Remember, he was in a bar once in a restaurant, and people said, who's writing this book? Or you're writing this book. He says, no, all these people, and he has his hand tan over the people in the restaurant. He says, all these people are writing my book. His producers, are they not his consumers? Your examination round is factification for incantation of a warping process. Declaim. Now, that's the name of the 1929 book that Joyce organized. A bunch of friends, professors, scholars, intellectuals wrote. I don't know how many essays. I have a copy out in the garage, 12 essays, interpreting Finnegan's Wake, which wasn't called Finnegan's Wake at that point. It was just called Work in Progress. So it was called your exag, your examination round his factification for incamination of a warping process. That's almost the exact title of that 1929 book. And then he says declaim. What does that mean? Does that mean to claim, to declare? I don't know. Declaim. Going to have to look that up. So here's what the actual title is, because then Don Thiel says, the reference to...
Declamare in Latin means to recite.
No, what did you say?
Declamare means to recite.
Declamare.
So from declaim.
Oh, to declaim. To declaim. Let's just tell Bill, yes, ending this hour. Oh, there's a keto. Good show, Bob. It's like, you know, someone from the future or from the past, you know. Good show, Bob. Even Love Jobs is still listening. Good stuff, Bob. Nicholas, I'm blocked. Oh, look, we got to bring Nicholas back in. No, you're not blocked. You're okay.
That was earlier.
All right.
Bob, that was earlier.
Oh, okay. All right. So, Thiel says, the reference to, and gives the title of the 1929 book, our examination round his factification for incantation of work in progress. Whereas in Finnegan's Wake, it's of a warping process, W-A-R-P-I-N-G. And then it says in brackets, a title Joyce provided for a volume of studies on Finnegan's Wake by the Transition Group. Transition was a journal at that time, who later McLuhan put down the people in transition. They didn't have a clue what Joyce was doing, McLuhan claimed. So anyways, a lot of his friends, Joyce's friends, wrote for transition. The reference to this thing, this title, relates Joyce to H.C.E., the everyman of his drama. Not here comes everybody, not the everybody, but the everyman, plural. This passage not only satirizes the efforts of the night-minded transition group, so Theo is saying, probably under the influence of McLuhan, that McLuhan is right, Joyce is making fun of the transition group. This passage not only satirizes the efforts of the night-minded transition group to comprehend the wake, but provides, so night-mind, that means they think it's a dream, I guess. It's focusing too much on that. This passage not only satirizes the efforts of the night-minded transition group to comprehend the wake, but provides an important clue to Joyce's communication process. Quote, his producers, are they not his consumers? That important statement. Theo says, at one level, it suggests that the transition writers provide Joyce with his material as well as consuming it. But at a deeper level, it suggests that the communication networks of society, so the media, filter to the artist his material, and at the same time, he produces artifacts for the communication networks of a society. So the media shapes the artist, and the artist gives products back to shape the media. Sergei,
the environment. Ian explains that goes further, that it goes into affecting everything.
Yes, the people make the environment. The people will determine whether the JFK files will be released or not. Who are the people? 7 billion whack jobs ignoring knowledge and emphatically sending cat pictures to each other. They will make the final decision. <All right. laughs> Sergei Eisenstein, who was a famous Russian filmmaker and a theoretician that Joyce knew and read, Sergei Eisenstein recognized in Finney's Wake, quote, the limit in reconstructing the reflection and refraction of reality in the consciousness and feelings of man. So Eisenstein recognized that there is a limit in reconstructing the reflection and refraction of reality in the consciousness and feelings of man, probably because there's always this media doing that, which Joyce achieved by, quote, from Eisenstein, a special dual-level method of writing, unfolding the display of events simultaneously with the particular manner in which those events pass through the consciousness and feelings, the associations and emotions of one of his chief characters. Reading that again. Which Joyce achieved, so the reconstructing, the limited reconstruction of the reflection and refraction of reality in the consciousness and feelings of man, that Joyce achieved that by, quote, a special dual-level method of writing, unfolding, and that is the unfolding the display of events simultaneously with the particular manner in which those events pass through the consciousness of feelings, the associations and emotions of one of his chief characters. So they show the events and show the medium that the events are in. That's what it means. Unfolding the display of events simultaneously with the particular manner in which those events pass through the consciousness. That's Eisenstein.
Yes, this thing with the Kennedy, it's like in Greece, they thought that the tragedy was a way to heal society with the catharsis.
Right.
Experience. And Kennedy is like the new god, the new hero, and it's like the society needs to know what happened. And this revelation
is... It's prevented. It's been prevented and frustrated.
Yeah, it's really like a mythical archetype. In modern times.
Well, Coker wrote years ago about how it was the first postmodern myth. Because nobody really knew who Kennedy was, he was way different from what people thought. They didn't know he murdered Marilyn Monroe. He was a TV image appropriate to TV, but it had nothing to do with his chemical body. And Ian says he committed suicide. So he's the first TV icon, which had nothing to do with the chemical body. Just like Harvey Weinstein is a TV icon. What is he like personally? That's for you to find out. Okay. So when Eisenstein suggested that, quote, the price paid is the entire dissolution of the very foundation of literary diction, the entire decomposition of the literary method itself. So Eisenstein understood that Joyce was making a book that was no longer based on book values, book archetypes. It was a movie. You probably could just see it as a movie thing. You probably couldn't see it as a TV extension. But Eisenstein and the non-literary guys, the guys who weren't just authors, most of the Joyce scholarship go into the writing aspect. They don't see that it's a movie. But the directors, the other media guys, see that in Finnegan's Wake, at least the smarter ones of them. So he says, this is a price we're paying. This book is a result of what media, modern media, has done to people. So Thiel says, when Eisenstein says that, Eisenstein failed to grasp Joyce's complex use of the oral and visual as well as the verbal aspects of language. Joyce is not trying to approximate a cinematic form in literature. See, so many people say, this ain't, well, Don says, this is not a movie. Joyce was attempting to bring the standard of craftsmanship in written and oral composition to the level where it can transfer values and insights from the mass media into literature. So Joyce said, we have to write a new way if we're going to transfer our media experiences into books. So Eisenstein thought it was the collapse of books, but Thiel's saying, no, Joyce had solved how you write about this stuff. It looks like the collapse of the book, but he actually retrieved the book and made it relevant. But you got to learn how to see that.
It cannot be a linear story.
Right.
It has to be this complex.
That's right. And so this is a good point by the young Don Thiel to see that. The critical problem is accentuated by the emphasis that Eisenstein places on in, quote, inner speech, which, while inalienable from that which is enriched by sensual thinking, is divorced from the oral and written tradition of language. So that's what Eisenstein mistakenly sees. He thinks it's just the inner dialogue. What Joyce saw, however, says Don Thiel, was the sensual character of the very forms of writing, apparent to a manuscript culture, and the very forms of vocal expression, which form networks in themselves. The word in Joyce is not inner. It is both printed and spoken. Finnegan's Wake imprints its meaning on the memory of the reader, just as its rhythm affects his ear, his bloodstream, and his emotions. So that's pretty complex, but the critical problem is accentuated by the emphasis that Eisenstein places on inner speech, which is not the stream of consciousness of Ulysses, which, while inalienable, not alienated from that which is enriched by sensual thinking, while inalienably from that which is enriched by sensual thinking, is divorced from the oral written tradition of language. That's what Thiel's saying. No, this is not divorced from the oral written tradition. What Joyce saw, however, was the sensual character of the very forms of writing and vocal expression which form networks in themselves, especially in the way back in the manuscript phase. The word in Joyce is not inner. Now, that's ionic. The word is not inner. It is a powerful interaction world maker. It's not just your thoughts. Literate man gets stuck in his thoughts. The word in Joyce is not inner. It is both printed and spoken. The Wake imprints its meaning on the memory of the reader, just as its rhythm affects his ear, his bloodstream, and his emotions. So one more paragraph. Let's see if I can finish this. James Joyce continues the neoclassical tradition of wit in his attempt to portray the soul's groupography. The group picture of the souls, that phrase comes up at the beginning of the essay. And he does it in a comic mode. The effect aimed at is the inclusion and participation of the individual in the work as a whole, an effect that Alexander Pope and Ben Jonson had attempted. Joyce has the advantage of a more complex language enriched by a greater variety of art forms. But his problem was common with Pope's and Ben Jonson, with theirs. It was to steer a mean between the extremes of romanticism, or enthusiasm, and rationalism. It has hardly been noticed that Joyce shares their interest in unity, Pope and Jonson's interest. His works confine themselves to moments of time and points of space. They deal with everyday occurrences and present a comic view of mental activity. When Joyce appears during the inquest of Jan, during the seance, so Joyce comes into it, he divulges the roots of his communionistic technique. There's your phatic communion. He divulges the roots of his communionistic, that's a word from Finnegan's Wake, technique. Then it says, it is the hand touch. Now, that was at the beginning of the essay. So Don's going back to that key quote about the hand touch. It's like tactility. It is the hand touch of, quote, Big Master Finnegan of the stuttering hand. H.C.E. stuttered. For the stutter of H.C.E. breaks the flow of ALP and begins the transference of information. Each medium breaks up the flow of the previous media mixture. Just as the Zeroy couplet, which is based on Alexander Pope's, I think, heroic couplet, or maybe even Pope called it the Zeroy couplet, but I think that's a pun. Just as the Zeroy couplet broke the flow of Renaissance lyricism to charge language with meaning. So reading that again, it is the hand touch, the tactility of Big Meister Finnegan of the stuttering hand, for that's the root of the communistic technique. For the stutter of H.E. breaks the flow of ALP and begins the transference of information, just as the Zeroy couplet broke the flow of Renaissance lyricism to charge language with meaning. Joyce's work shows an increased sensitivity to written language, which has been partially reduced back to a flux. His techniques of arresting eye and ear are an attempt to push the dynamic model in the arts to a point where a more complete participation on the part of the producer, consumer, reader is possible. Though dealing with the magic lantern world, he is attempting the careful and precise analysis of vivisection. The movement of the wake is towards day, quote, my coming forth from darkness, unquote, accomplished through the gift of language. And then there's a quote from Finnegan's Wake. Be thy mouth given unto thee, for why do you lack a link of luck to poise a pont of perfect peace, end of quote. The satire implicit in the title of Finnegan's Wake is a key to the resolution of the work. For Joyce's favorite phrase was, quote, wait till Finnegan wakes. And that's Ion, right? Wait till Ion wakes. So, we don't have much time, so maybe we'll go over, we'll do a little bit more about that. But there's the exciting climax to an amazing essay that the woman who buried James Joyce in Switzerland, in Zurich, wrote McLuhan, said that article is the best interpretation of the wake I've ever come across. And her husband, Siegfried Gideon, was a big influence of McLuhan in the early 40s with his book, Space, Time, and Architecture. And then later, Mechanization Takes Command. So there's the network. And even this Gideon guy becomes part of the explorations group in Toronto. So it's always the same five people, Opinel and whoever he picks up, four other people. It's always the big five. You can look at my diary. Look at what was going on in Dartmouth, the five high school students. Barry, sweetheart.